SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Monday, October 12th, and hard to start the show today with the general upbeat and racing related happiness and I suppose, under the conditions of the weekend, frivolity. We'll get to it, and we'll celebrate with successful connections from the weekend, not just today, but for a couple of days. And, of course, there's holiday Monday racing action around the country today, augmenting the usual beginning of the week programs. However, this'll be as difficult as I expected, despite 48 hours to prepare for it. Saturday morning, starting from early hours, as difficult a morning as I've had really in memory, with two passings, one anticipated and not that anticipation makes the reality any easier. And then one so shocking and out of the blue that there was no way to not let it essentially take you out at the knees. And, you know, those that listened last week when Peter Miller visited and might have heard me allude to Barry Abrams having had a fall at home and being hospitalized and being in dire condition. And as the week went on, it got worse for Barry, who had been fighting cancer that took his voice, but not his his spirit. And the family having to make hard decisions. And Barry was comfortable at the end, and his passing Friday. News, you know, spreading through the night and into the morning. And I was up at 4 and to prepare for the race day and write up selections and so forth. And Rick Hammerly had texted me in the middle of the night that, you know, that Barry was gone. And that, you know, to some degree, knowing how, you know, sick he had been and, you know, that he had been fading, you'd like to think, you know, that it's a measure of peace and rest after a fight that was, I mean, over a decade plus. I think somebody suggested it was his first diagnosis came maybe close to 20 years ago. But Barry was one of those people that you didn't expect it would ever get to him, and that it would ever take him. And you know, we've had the opportunity to celebrate Mo Forz's success the past year plus, and I don't think I've been happier, at the track for someone more than I was when Mo Forza won that Twilight Derby before the Breeders' Cup. And I mean, the joy in that winner's circle and throughout Santa Anita was just overwhelming and wonderful. Barry Abrams, as I wrote on in a couple of different places on Saturday, Barry represents so many things that are good about the sport and good about life and about generosity and thoughtfulness. And I wrote where I had room, you're so limited at Twitter, but at Facebook I tried to explain tzedakah, which is a precept in Judaism of living justly and doing what's right. And in particular, it also, as Hebrew is particularly adept at, one word can mean several things, and it means charity. And Barry Abrams' charitableness, it occurred to me that on that front, I mean, Barry was like a Jewish West Coast Alan Jerkins. all the money and all the things that they both gave to people, never expecting to be paid back. And one of the things that tzedakah means is giving charitably in a manner that lets the recipient retain their dignity. I got to know Barry. I only knew of Barry's, name as a trainer, being from the East Coast. But then got to know him over these last 15 years with the visits to California. And as fascinating and as remarkable a person as we have around the sport or anywhere, and the pleasure you could glean from sitting with Barry at Clocker's Corner and the stack of Manila folders filled with all kinds of fascinating breeding, obviously the unusual heat portion of this. I mean, over the next several days, we'll hear so many different voices. I if I open this up widely, I mean, we'd spend the whole week with people that have wonderful things to say and appreciations to offer of Barry Abrams. But he had so much to teach and so much to, pass along, and did it. It was infectious. His enthusiasm, his passion for the sport, his personal story, which is unbelievable. I mean, literally walked out of the Soviet Union and came to make his life here And so many, there's so many descriptors. When I sat down to try to express, in a moderate amount of words, and trainer, breeder, owner, better, thoroughbred, harness, his acumen and his approach to things. He's just so successful in everything that he did, and is going to be just terribly, terribly missed already. And we'll hear from people who were really were touched even more than I certainly have been. And then after 3 hours of thinking about and being saddened by word of Barry's death, a text comes from Jerry McLennan, Paul Pompa's cousin and racing manager. And you might as well have been hit by lightning. Paul had died in his sleep overnight. And the unfairness, Barry certainly lived a remarkable life, and I'm sure, everybody would love more time, but for Paul at 62 and having just recently fully retired, having sold the trucking business, having worked, when you say workaholic, Paul, I would hear from Paul Pompa, especially during the text era, you could text Paul at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, and he was at his desk. And trucking is the business that he had, and of course, the ties to UPS and all that, but worked. It was when they say workaholic, that's a, you can't work harder and be more dedicated to a business than Paul was, and he was dedicated that way to everything, to his family, to Elisa and the boys, and then came the horses and his success in the game. And we'll certainly hear from a number of the trainers who worked for Paul, and including my man, Gary Siaka, who was might have been Paul's first trainer. And they had a lot of success claiming horses together. And, of course, Patty Reynolds. And then later, as Paul got bigger and as his program expanded, he's worked with Chad and with Todd Pletcher, Linda Rice, Bill Mott. And I got to know Paul very casually through the show. And certainly knew his name on the ownership line for years. And then I went up and introduced myself to him at either in Saratoga Paddock or Belmont. I can't remember. And specifically, the horse that kind of brought us together was Backseat Rhythm. And when I introduced myself, he said, "Oh, you always say such nice things about me and about the horse," and found out that that he had been listening to the show and the faithful listener of the show. and became friends from that point, and then ultimately became partners on Toy Cannon when Paul demonstrated what kind of a person he was and the kindness and the generosity that defined him. And he came in with us and we got to share Toy Cannon's the first 2.5-3 years of his career, and it meant the world to me to have Paul Pompa as a partner. And he, you know, you heard him on the show many times over the years, because I could reach out to Paul for insights, and he described, you know, his experience that became you know, bigger than even he wanted, and then he kind of pared back, and you know, his experience around the game, you know, was very interesting and enlightening. And he was, you know, very generous in sharing, you know, the ups and downs, and you know, always struck me as somebody that took, you know, the highs well and took the lows in stride. And the common element to these two passings is essentially that, you know, the game is so much about relationships, you know, between individuals and in between individuals and horses and, you know, all the different, you know, all the different elements. And, you know, any death diminishes all of us. But for the game, losing people like Barry Abrams and Paul Pompa Jr., is just, you know, devastating. You can't replace people like this. They have to be cultivated. They grow into the oversized place they take in the game and in our hearts. Paul Pompa and Barry Abrams. We've got a lot to do, and I know we'll hear from others today that will echo, you know, my sentiments, I'm sure. And at the same time, because the game is what it is, it goes on and, you know, presses forward. So we'll talk to some very happy connections, and in this next couple of segments, that'll include Tim Hamm. In fact, Tim will join us next, and day out of the office, wins the Frisette, first grade one win for Tim Hamm. And Tim's somebody you've heard for years, and while racing in Ohio was struggling, Tim, you know, kept at it, and you know, it never wavered. And, you know, not only has the quality of racing elevated in Ohio, Tim's operation has have gone national, and in partnerships with WinStar and others. He's getting quality horses and horses that can win Grade One races. So looking forward to hearing from Tim Hamm. We'll talk about the filly. And she, you know, even off the layoff, and I understood why people were, you know, wavering a little bit. You know, oh, she missed a month, seemingly, and you know, why didn't she come back for the spin away? But she picked up right where she left off, having won at the beginning of the meet in Saratoga, and wins the Frisette well. And, of course, we also had Jackie's Warrior. We'll talk to Steve Asmussen, who just continues to have a parade of nice young horses. The win in the Champagne by Jackie's Warrior was stunning. Reinvestment risk looked like they were going to engage again, and Jackie's Warrior just cruised forward and, you know, left Reinvestment Risk to, you know, finish okay and ran a nice race to be second in the Champagne. But Jackie's Warrior marching toward Breeders' Cup. And from every standpoint, there's nothing that says, looking at him, that two turns is going to be any kind of a problem. He's got a, you know, he's got a long, elegant neck. He doesn't look sprinty. Big Grade One follow up for Jackie's Warrior and McLean's Music. And I, you know, not to make it about, you know, about what we do, but we've got the McLean's Music colt by the name of Scherzando, and he's getting ready for his debut. And with every recent success of Sons and Daughters of McLean Music, got to be excited about our colt, the big, handsome, sweet colt that Dave Scanlon and Marty Shapiro partnered up with, and looking forward to getting him going. He's got some couple of 5-furlong works to come up yet, but. So in this hour, Tim Hamm and Steve Asmussen hitting some of the other highlights from the weekend before Tim joins us. The big Grade One card in New York that kind of unfolded after the 2-year-olds. And the 2-year-old races, you know, which were early in the fourth and the fifth, it gave way to, you know, really good. I know people were disappointed there wasn't a bigger field in the Jockey Club Gold Cup, but I don't know what else needed to happen in there. Todd Pletcher gets his first Jockey Club win, which had been something that was kind of absent on the resume, and that that he'd been, you know, he'd been seeking. So happy saver. Who just kind of kept plugging away under Arad Ortiz. And it looked, you know, the race looked like it was coming down to Mystic Guide and Tacitus, who it's just crazy. I mean, people just, there's always horses like this, right? That come along and are just a lightning rod I don't want to say ridicule, a lightning rod for consternation. I don't know what he found himself on the lead, and he's a horse that seemingly would prefer to have others, you know, abreast or in front, and they are pack animals, and you can do all you want to teach them, you know, to get in front and stay in front, but it's not easy. It's a tricky element to, you know, the makeup of, you know, of a pack animal. So he's a nice horse. He'll have to wait to find his Grade One. And since we're mentioning Tacitus, let me also slip in the news from first thing this morning that Enable officially was retired, and we'll certainly do some Enable appreciations, but there's plenty of time for that. Wonderful, wonderful career, and, you know, being feted worldwide this morning with the news that she will not only go to the broodmare band of Prince Khalid is going to visit Kingman. So people are already, somebody, I don't know if it was Racing Post or somebody was already inviting naming of the Kingman and Abel baby. Let the ink dry on the press release, all right? Happy Saver, you know, remains undefeated and has done everything that's asked. Very nice win for Happy Saver. And the three-year-olds finish 1-2. A good group of three-year-olds. I think that reality is kind of cementing in people's consciousness. And the other grade one was Civil Union. And I made a terrible mistake building my tickets regarding Civil Union. I had her fourth in there, but she wins the Flower Bowl, and she's okay. Heading for the Philly and Mare Turf, and she might be one of those types that, you know, it doesn't necessarily wow you, and she certainly didn't jump off the page in that group, frankly. Thought she was just one of the ones, but Joel Rosario partnered up, and as a result, wins the Grade 1 Flower Bowl. So, Shug will join us. I haven't even actually reached out, but we'll see if we can't get Shug in for, if not today, later, tomorrow maybe. It is a race day for New York horsemen. I'll stay in New York before we talk Keeneland and hit on some of the other highlights. And actually, Case, I should have you reach out to Tim. I don't want to get too far behind. But Phil Gleaves, and we're looking forward to getting Phil on. What a nice week for one of the nicest people in the sport, as well-liked as anybody that trains horses. 2nd of July wins the Futurity yesterday. The Jack Milton, and not only was Phil and Brian Hilliard probably delighted, but so was Gary Barber. Who essentially is standing Jack Milton. I know Gary was excited by Jack Milton getting 2nd of July across in the Futurity. 79 buyer, very respectable, and is going to go to the Juvenile Turf Sprint. And, you know, Phil, earlier in the week with Brian Hilliard and partners, they had won, I told you, they won the Aspirin on Tuesday. I think I tweeted Monday, but it was Tuesday. That the aspirant, the Ladyfinger on Monday was right. Yeah, Ladyfinger was Monday. That was the My Englehart's party at Pages. But Tuesday, another win for Thin White Duke, Steve Crist and Ken Durrett and Phil and Brian Hilliard. This one is a Hilliard homebred. 2nd of July. And then in the matron, Wesley Ward, Royal Approval, wins the girl side when it came to these two historic races that have been made into two-year-old turf sprint springboards toward Breeders' Cup. And Sands Point, too, on Saturday. That Tamahir, who looks very good. Looked very good. I singled her, and that was worthwhile. But Chad, with another Wooten Bassett, Wooten Bassett keeps turning up every couple of weeks with his North American runners. That was impressive, and won kind of the way you, if you thought that she was going to win, she won the way you thought she would. So did Harvey's Little Goya. Let's turn to Keeneland and the Queen Elizabeth. And American Pharoah gets his elusive first grade one winner. And Harvey's Little Goya with a nice effort. Very good ride. You know, Martin Garcia, very quietly, Martin Garcia has kind of carved out a new environment for himself in Kentucky. Well done. And also, of course, on Saturday. And for Harvey's Little Goya, a wonderful, tribute in her own right to the late Harvey Clark. Very nice. And in the Fayette, Mr. Freeze, and boy, if ever there was a race where the handicappers on Friday that we had, that, you know, we went through, if ever there was a race that everybody got it right, even if they didn't pick Mr. Freeze, it really turned out, it was one of those funny races, right? Where you're watching the end and everybody you thought was going to be in contention was in contention. Title ready and Aurelius Maximus chasing Mr. Freeze home, and Mr. Freeze just kept holding it together under Javi Castellano. And it was a good weekend for to honor and serve. Of course, he's off where is he? Is he in Turkey? I think he's in Turkey. Because not only did Mr. Freeze win for him, but also yesterday, salute with honor for Mrs. Weber, the Durham Cup, Mark Cassie. Cassie with a terrific weekend. And in fact, mentioning Gary Barber, I should fold in that Master Spy won the Cup and Saucer. And on Friday, how about Got Stormy getting up in that last jump and hanging a brutal beat, absolutely brutal. On we talked about the Brendan Walsh runner. Oh my God, I'm going to forget. But Got Stormy, and I didn't think she needed to win that race. Into Mystic, who, you know, basically looked a winner every place until the photograph dried. But Got Stormy angling toward the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint, and Gary Barber with a position potentially to take back-to-back Breeders' Cup sprints with two different mares. Pretty crazy. And what a great job that the whole Cassie team has done with Got Stormy, refashioning her into, because let's be honest, mid year, everybody was convinced she was a chicken in a pot. So, well done. She'll be the favorite in the turf sprint. And should mention too, how about Steve Asmussen will join us in about 15, 20 minutes, but Nashville, the older horse, it's, you know, kind of a late arrival on the scene. And as if Yoppin wasn't already a very nice replacement for Matoli, here comes a complete shocker in terms of Nashville that just emerges. You know, had the nice maiden win, then comes back for this non-winners of two and blitzes, you know, a solid allowance field. He's a Spitestown, bred by Braffini Farm, and is a Windstar China Horse Club endeavor. Nashville came back from the 91 buyer debut in the slop at Saratoga and follows it up with a 101 allowance win here. Unbelievable. And, you know, he was cut out to be a nice horse. He was a $460,000 Keeneland yearling. It's not like, it's not like he was a reclamation project. So paying off, and patience, again, patience always pays off, right? That's the one of the bottom lines. So much to do. And, Case, let's maybe reach for, Casey says, call who? Tim Ham. Tim Ham will join us first. And as we reach for Tim, and just in case, Casey, because he's only been on once in the last, well, maybe more than once in the last couple of years. But just in case you need the number, we'll get him. And Tim does have a horse today. There's two stakes, and one is off the turf, unfortunately. The race at Monmouth. New York is off the turf, too. So they made a very good decision tabling the Knickerbocker and the Hill Prince. That was very smart, and those got rescheduled. But down at Monmouth, unfortunately, the Born to Run. Now, there are a couple of MTOs, and there's some participants in this race, the Born to Run, that have run on the main track. So they will they'll still have a nice field for that. But at Presque Isle tonight, there's the Fitz Dixon, the juvenile memorial race, and a nice group there, including one of Tim's. And we'll get to both of those I'm sure, this morning. A couple of other notes, and mentioning Monmouth, you know, I did very quickly in passing the other day mention Nona Madeline midweek won that Lady Secret for Todd with Nick Juarez. But Almanar came back off of what? A 500-day layoff, right? Give or take. And wins the Monmouth Stakes. Nice return for Chad. And Joe Bravo aboard. And in fact, Joe had been aboard for a win the last time he had run a year and a half ago. And Umberto Rispoli, and yesterday in the California flag, Galilean wins for Sadler with Rispoli. There was some very, you know, the races at we told you about at Charlestown. I'm going to reach out to Scotty Allen because he had the biggest win, I think, of his career in the Breeders' Classic. Awesome Faith. And I had to tweet it yesterday because it was late night, Saturday night, and Awesome Faith was like 35-1 and 37-1, I think, and got an unbelievably terrific ride by Antonio Lopez. And I saw a photograph of Lopez. He had a smile from ear to ear. Lopez with a brilliant ride on this Awesome Faith. And this is a 7-year-old, a Frisian Fire. And, has made a lot of money, has won a bunch of races. I think it was his 11th, I think his 11th career win. So we're gonna reach out. Got to tell you about the Virginia bred races as well. But right now, one of our favorite things to do is congratulate connections, and particularly horsemen who have been at it a while, on their first grade one win. And this week it's Tim Ham's turn to soak it in and to see it permanently etched on your Equibase record, where it says, you know, grade one winning trainer. Tim, congratulations.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate that.
This was interesting because this was a good field, and she had been, you know, kind of away. She had missed some time. And so people were, you know, wondering, could she come back and capture that Saratoga form? Talk about, you know, what transpired and thoughts going in.
You know, Steve, when you start these babies early, as you see, her first race was in the middle of May. It's a long season, and if you don't space them, a lot of times you come up with an empty horse at the end of the year. So we just really laid out a game plan, spaced the races a little bit to try to have her fresh air at the end of the year.
So coming out of Saratoga, coming out of the Schuylerville, there wasn't any issue at all? Just a little bit of freshening and just kind of refocusing for this? Or did you come out of it and not have necessarily a specific goal in mind?
No, our goal was the Breeders' Cup at the end of the year. I mean, the way she had ran, I mean, that you know, I think you got to etch that on your plans. And then you look at the races, just felt like a 7/8 with a spinaway in between might be a little much. We felt like she was a filly that had shown she could run fresh on two occasions, first out and coming back on 60-some days in the Schuylerville. So I really saw no reason to jam them in there together.
Interesting. And then this race, the 1 mile, you did have probably some other things to consider, including some two-turn opportunities. This kind of a good intermediate step, talk about that part of the equation.
Well, I think you just explained it pretty well, Steve. I mean, you had the Alcibiades or you had the Frisette looking, coming off of the layoff, if you want to call it a layoff. From 6 furlongs, thought the one-turn mile was a logical step to, progress her in distance and navigate it. Obviously, a trip around 2 turns at Keeneland was enticing as well, but, you know, trying to get the grade one, we thought our best opportunity was the one-turn for Zet.
Well, this ends up, I thought, you know, you couldn't have drawn it up any better. And what's most encouraging about it, when you've got a horse that won a debut at 4.5, and essentially, you know, once she got her feet under her in that maiden win at Gulfstream in May, you know, she powers up and you know, wins off by 4. In the Schuylerville, she, you know, sat behind or with the horses and was in the race flow. What I thought was most encouraging about this, Tim, is it's obvious that as she stretches out, she can really be rated and will do what is asked of her. And that makes her a serious commodity. Talk about the trip and what you and Mike Salito and Junior had talked about going in.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Very rateable filly, very kind to train. Does what's asked of her, doesn't, you know, she's very, all those things are great attributes for her, and you're right, we feel like she would go longer with no problem, and she did. As far as this race versus any conversations with Junior and Mike, you know, basically ride her exactly like you did in the Schuylerville, and I think we'll be home free. Luckily, we drew the 5 posts toward the outside portion of the field. She was able to break. I thought we could control the pace inside us from our post, and I think he did, and it was a perfect trip.
Yeah, and she, you know, takes control, and Junior, you know, basically held Vequist safe, and Vequist had to, you know, Saez had to kind of negotiate the one hole and you know, getting out into a spot to contend, and you know, made a run at her and answered it, you know, with authority, and smoothly powers home 2 lengths to the good and straight toward Breeders' Cup. And, you know, when it comes to, you know, advancing, you know, in the other manner in which you hope that they do, she ratchets up the figure, 92 buyer, and, you know, doing everything that you could possibly ask of a young filly at this stage.
Yeah, absolutely, and you know, you got to think off that effort. She's in a prime position to maybe move forward a little bit. Hopefully, I mean, we think we got a fresh horse, and yeah, she's done everything asked of her easily.
Well, this is a big win. Talk about the grade one. You know, you've packed away a number of, you know, grade two and three wins, but the G1 means just a little bit more, I think, to every horseman.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's the highest level, so you want to get that behind you, and you know, it's great. I mean, it feels really good, and really happy for all the connections, Sienna Farm, our whole staff, and of course the horse. It's, you know, just a good one to get behind you.
Well, and it doesn't hurt, you know, to you know, win a $250,000 grade one, and you know, you're on the ownership line too, not just the trainer line.
Feed some of those young horses we got coming up for next year, Steve.
Well, and you know, Sienna very quietly does just a tremendous job, and they breed a good horse, and you know, I don't think they, you know, they're not glory hounds either. You got to be delighted for them to, you know, to get to this. I mean, you know, I'm sure they watch with pleasure when the horses they breed that are in other people's names, you know, when they go on and do well. But this might be fun for them to, you know, to go and you know, be able to go to Keeneland and watch her and the lead up here over the next few weeks.
Yeah, their staff out there has been outstanding to us. Dave Pope's the call him the business guy, and Nacho's the horse guy out there, and Mr. Magnero. Early on we had some luck with a filly named Velvet Mood with them, not to this level of success, but we went a stake in Woodbine with her, and they've just been super. They helped us along with this filly. Went to her farm for a little R&R in between to get her battery recharged, and very, very great people to work with.
I love it. Well, day out at the office, the Into Mischief out of the Indian Charlie Mare, got to have a dream, and that's always the case. And for Tim Hamm, an opportunity to go to Breeders' Cup, you know, the field. We'll see how it starts to take shape. And I'm trying to think of who's the last Thistledown-based horse to make the cup.
Too Much Bling.
Ah, good job.
How about that, Steve?
Good job. Well done. All right. Too Much Bling.
Brent. Yeah.
I love it. Good deal. All right. I answered with, I didn't have to go look even. This was, thank you for that.
You got it. Well, he's a homebred, so kind of know him pretty well.
Exactly. Well, got to also ask, since we're together, and because hours from now, the fifth race at Presque tonight, and the Fitz Dixon, the juvenile standard at Presque Isle, Imperial King. What do we got here?
We love the horse. You know, he's another one we've liked from the get-go. I think we got a live shot. You know, a horse can run, and I think, you know, it looks like a wide-open field, and, you know, I think he's got a heck of a shot to get the job done.
You know, how many do you have at Presque?
At Presque, we have 32 right
now.
Wow. 32, yeah.
Wow. Where's my? There it is. I knew I had printed it out. It's a nice group. It's a group of 10. You're on the outside, and broke the maiden going 5, and this is 6.5. A gemologist, gelding, the Three Chimneys bred, and you know, is partnered up with you in here with the Blazing Meadows moniker, and looked like he didn't necessarily. He didn't necessarily go any faster on the synthetic, but you know, from a control standpoint, there is a lot of speed in here, Tim, no?
Yeah, there's plenty of speed in there, and most of these young sprint races, you know, they teach them all to get out. I think the 10-hole's fine. We're going enough distance to the first turn. I think he'll be able to hopefully get a good break and see what they're doing inside him and go from there. The Three Chimneys folks is another group, you know, Mr. Toriava, Chris Baker, Doug Coffin. My brother now works over there within the last year, and they're great people to work with.
Well, things going pretty nicely, and in fact, you're busy there tonight with 4, and you got one at Thistle as well. 60 Cent, not 50 Cent, but 60 Cent, who's been knocking on the door, and this is a Palace Malice 2-year-old that has got a couple of placements. What going to break through today, the filly?
We think it's her turn. Another Three Chimney co-owned filly. And it should be her turn, Steve. I mean, we're hoping to get her done.
60 Cent tonight today at Thistledown in the second race. Eric Barron is going to ride. Well, Tim, I'm so happy for you. And the big win, day out at the office, and thought she would come back running, and she sure did. Best of luck heading forward toward Breeders' Cup, and we'll see you at Keeneland.
Thanks, Steve. Always great to talk to you. Appreciate it.
Not at all. Tim Hamm, everybody, and the first grade one of his career. Speaking of grade ones, Jackie's Warrior in the Champagne, and it was the first grade one of the weekend for Steve Asmussen. Steve, good morning. Congratulations. Case, we got him?
I hear you.
Oh, there we go. There you are.
Thank you very much.
Steve, this, you know, we got a few things to talk about, but this could not have been more impressive.
Very much so, obviously. A very fast horse with his Saratoga Special and hopeful win. But if at all possible, I think his Champagne was even more impressive.
What I thought was notable, even though he was out in front, he pretty much is rating, not that he's rating himself, but it seems kind of rare that you get a horse out there, you know, on the front end, and then when challenged, just essentially he kind of dropped it into third gear and just eased away, and that's what was, to me, was really exciting.
Yeah, very much so. He's obviously, like we said, very talented. going along in 46 and change, obviously, was within himself, and Joel roused him a bit at the head of the stretch, and he accelerated as we had hoped, and a very, very big win.
You know, and one thing, you know, we talk, obviously, about any number of you know, successes for you and the clients. I'm trying to think. For the Robesons, is this not their first grade one, is it?
Well, not if the hopeful was, but, you know, he's an extremely significant horse. Kirk and Judy, longtime owners, had some very nice horses, but this is the best one I've ever run for them.
How about that? Well, it's awfully nice for them to, you know, how long have they been in the game?
Before me, you know.
Is that right?
El Paso, you know, St. Florian at Sutherland Park, 20 years ago at least or whatever, and he was in it before then. So,
how about that?
You know, long-time owner, big-time, you know, supporter from El Paso, and it's great to have a horse of Jackie's Warriors caliber for him.
Big time, and you know, reasonable purchase too. $95,000 is a Keeneland yearling, and out of an AP 500 mare, Unicorn Girl, originally bred by J&J Stables, and one of a host of horses that from the weekend that remain undefeated. Jackie's Warrior, fourth win, and heads towards the Breeders' Cup as, you know, obviously, if not the horse to beat, certainly one of the choices. And on that topic, Steve, watching him physically before the race and in the paddock and then particularly on the gallop out, he certainly is built like a horse that, you know, is going to go a route of ground.
Like I said, Champagne's the furthest he's run to this point, and it's the most impressive he's looked, and he is a tremendous physical, and I think he's got an exceptional mind to go with it. You know, just extremely fortunate to be able to run him.
How much fun is it to put a, you know, to add another grade one stripe for McLean's Music too? I'm sure John Securo and company were thrilled.
Well, absolutely, you know, and the belief that John showed in McLean's Music off of his only run, you know, is proving quite fruitful.
Well, and it's also good when you see, you know, when you see them, you know, piling up, and obviously with the win that Chad fashioned in the Preakness, and it's just, you know, sometimes people, you know, make assumptions about a stallion, you know, just because he had the short career and you know, was only able to make that one start, it isn't necessarily indicative of you know, what's going to go on with the progeny. So coming back and running like this and, you know, showing durability goes a long way to help him. We should mention, before we talk about some other things, Midnight Bourbon plugging away and gets grade one placed.
Yeah, you know, very, very nice horse with a, you know, tremendous family, and a great big horse that I think that will be an exceptional three-year-old.
Before we talk about Keeneland and a couple things from last weekend, Steve, some thoughts about the pair coming out of the Frisette. And some people, I think, you know, Cantata was, some people were trying to, you know, kind of project her, and Joy's Rocket, you know, coming off the effort on the turf. Some thoughts about their runs. Uh-oh. Casey just told me we lost Steve. All right, we'll get him back. And, call him back. The you know, Joy's Rocket was interesting, and we were certainly watching Joy's Rocket because she was coming out of that Bolton Landing where there had just been this crazy parade of winners. The horses that had finished third, fourth, fifth, and sixth had all come back and won stakes. We talked about that last week. So Joy's Rocket, but it might be that, you know, might be that she wants turf. So we'll see what Steve's thoughts were. Cantata, I think Cantata was the one that, you know, kind of thought, you know, that she would potentially, you know, step up in this spot. So, well, you having trouble getting it back? Casey trying trying to get Steve back with us. In addition, I do want to ask him about Aurelius Maximus, who ran a good second in the Fayette. And we got to go back to last weekend, too, because we didn't talk Yaupin. I kind of waited. I, you know, sometimes it's tough to make that decision. Steve is back with us. Steve, we were asking about Joy's Rocket and Cantata.
Right. Joy's Rocket, nice filly. Think better suited for some shorter distances, and those opportunities will come up for Cantata. Don't think she got the trip that she needs on that day. Huge pedigree filly that'll benefit from being older and longer races, but both of them came out of it in good shape and have bright futures ahead of them.
Well, speaking of bright futures, let's shift the scene to Keeneland. And before we talk about the Fayette, some thoughts about Nashville. Two for two, and as good as his debut was, the allowance win was even more impressive.
Right. Anyway, yeah, to witness that in person, that was he's simply faster than they are, and considerably so.
It seems like he was, you know, he was cut out to be nice.
He ain't cut out to be nice. He is nice.
He is nice. That's right. What took so much time to get him to the races?
We were lucky enough that Windstar sent him to us this summer, and he's progressed nicely. Obviously, with his ability, doing our best to handle him with kid gloves, and he is a rare talent.
Really nice. And obviously, by bringing him back with the allowance try, which is a luxury that you get with Keeneland, stake next. I mean, how aggressive are you going to be with him?
All depends on how he trains coming out of this race. We're very obviously extremely pleased with the results of the weekend and how we're doing today. But with his level of ability, stakes are hopefully in his near future.
Well, they're going to run a 6-furlong race on that same racetrack early in November. Is he a sprint candidate?
We're going to see how he trains. And, obviously, several discussions with Elliot and ownership group with him on what is best and how to proceed with him.
All right. I will not press you beyond that question. On that question, we will wait and see if Nashville turns up as we get closer toward Breeders' Cup. Well, there's a couple of other winners from the weekend, and certainly one or last weekend, and I'm glad I waited, Steve, so we could cover off some of these other good things. But talk about Yaupin, who just pretty much just throttled that group in the Chick-Lang 10 days ago.
He is obviously extremely talented, and I think he is Jackie's Warrior 2.0, you know, just a year older and easy to be around, easy on everybody around him, and very fast when necessary.
Again, this was, you know, this is a horse that, you know, we've talked the last few years when it came to Matoli and then with Yaupin's emergence this year. It's a pretty nice luxury. This is an Uncle Mo that was 255 and the Heiling Brats, and big chance for the Breeders' Cup for them to come back and win another Breeders' Cup sprint. So looking forward to Yaupin.
The Heidelbros have done really well with some fast horses, and Mr. Heidelbro is excellent at finding them.
And they're also, you know, there also has to be the handling and as we all say, Steve, the slow ones don't get hurt. So, you know, you're always with a horse this fast and this impressive. You know, you have to be super careful. I want to bring around another sprint winner that took a while from her 2-year-old to 3-year-old form to materialize. But talk about the Miss Preakness win. Thrilled for Alex and Joanne Lieblong to win the Miss Preakness with Wicked Whisper.
Yeah, me as well. It was a very good win. Very, you know, the filly had some splint issues early in the year, and then with 2020 being as adjusted as it has been, never exactly having this filly in the right spot for her to show her quality and the caliber of mare that it took to win last year's Frisette was awfully nice to see, because obviously a very talented filly, and to have her fast again is nice to see.
Well, happy for Alex and Joanne, and this is the Liam's Map that was $500,000 and has done nothing but keep top company between the Frisette win last year and gave a good try in the Breeders' Cup, but you know clearly is going to be focused at one turn, right? I mean, there's no more designs on stretching out.
I think the filly's extremely talented. Trying to get into a rhythm with her.
Sure.
I believe that she'll get 2 turns and just has that level of ability. She's just a great mind. She is very easy to handle. And it's just like I said, it's good to have her back at the races performing at a high level. But she'll do anything anybody ever asks her to do.
Nice. Wicked Whisper with the Miss Preakness, and nice weekend in Baltimore. And Steve, also got to ask you about Aurelius Maximus, who kept at it and kept trying to get to Mr. Freeze. And maybe if that race is a little longer, he runs him down. But that was a good try.
He's a high-quality horse. I feel he ran a good race, and things could have worked out a little differently. He is good enough for that level of competition, which is great to see. He had run a couple very fast conditioned races, but for him to be able to perform with the variables that were in place for him Saturday, it's proved to be a quality horse.
Nice. Would you think about Dirt Mile for him by chance?
I feel that comes back a little quick off of that big of an effort.
Okay. All right. But, when's the Clark? The Clark's at the end of the month?
The end of November.
In November. So, is he going to, you're going to think about that?
Like I said, it was good to see him run at that level against that level of competition. And it'll all depend on how he's training and what indications he's giving us on what should be the next spot for him.
Well, a couple of other quick notes to touch on from the last couple of weeks. And, Steve, how about the Max Player and coming out of the Preakness and got some other opportunities now and kind of refocus post-Triple Crown?
Right. You know, the trip Max had in the Preakness, you know, from being shuffled back away from there to stopped in the far. He is a horse that is going to be significant going forward, and can't wait until he's an older horse and he puts it all together.
Nice. Is he done for the year?
Well, he is training presently at Churchill and get a little bit of a freshening, but Max will tell us what we need to do.
Fair enough. And I do want to ask you about Echo Town, who I thought ran well in the Phoenix.
He ran a peculiar race in the Phoenix. He was the 5/8 pole. He's a half a length off the lead. I think it's a 3/8 pole. They called him 7 back, and he gets beat a couple lengths.
So, yeah.
Most likely, I put blinkers on him to go back to training, and we need him to stay engaged in the middle of a race. And feel that there's even more left in the tank with him.
What's his status going forward toward?
We are considering the Breeders' Cup sprint with him at this point.
Good. Makes sense. Well, Steve, we're at that point in the visit where we look ahead to, you know, some of the starters this week, and we could go anywhere. We could go to Remington. We could go to Belmont. Ever since you had that guaranteed win earlier in the year, everybody asked me. I get tweets. Ask Steve for his mortal lock.
Can't lose. I got like three this week. It's going to be hard to choose between them.
Let me see if I can.
I think three or four at least can't lose this week.
Let's ask about in proximity. How's this black and tan at Monmouth on Wednesday?
It's the right spot. That's the right spot for black and tan. You know, Toby does a wonderful job and feels that that's where she belongs. Ought to run well.
Black and tan for West Point and Partners on Wednesday at Monmouth. And how about later today? What about Mountain King at Indy today?
Definitely expect him to win.
All right.
I definitely do. You know, he is a cantankerous part that is putting it together. And he's got the ability to win, and I think that his focus is coming around, and today's his day.
Excellent. All right. There's a pair today and Wednesday. Steve, congratulations. Jackie's Warrior, one of the really exciting two-year-old prospects across the country now, a two-time grade one winner, and looking forward toward Breeders' Cup with him and many more. Keep him happy, keep him healthy, and we'll talk soon.
All right. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Steve Asmussen, everybody. And, you know, as always with Steve, we could talk about, it's just, you know, there's all kinds of places and horses. Let's take the top of the hour break, though. And Ron Anderson is going to visit be the first to pay tribute to Barry Abrams. And, of course, the long time that Ron spent on the West Coast, and particularly... you've heard me talk about this before regarding Barry and the early portion of Joel Rosario's career. And so there's that connection with Ron as well. So Ron Anderson begins could be an endless parade of tributes to Barry. And we're also... waiting for some details when it comes to the arrangements for Paul Pompa. And so, hour two at the races on this holiday Monday. Back after this, Ron Anderson.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.